2 Samuel, chapter number 3. We began a journey about 5 years ago, and I didn't really know at the time, but we began a journey some 5 years ago studying the exodus of the children of Israel. We began with Moses. It's really how it began, a study of Moses and his calling. And we, I hope prayerfully and leadership of God's Spirit, just kept right on with the children of Israel from the Exodus all the way up through Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, and now into 2 Samuel. And I continue to be blessed by our study, and I hope that you are, because of the somewhat sporadic nature of our services. I hope that you're able to keep up with characters and the recent events, and probably I'm going to get Joab and Abner's name backwards, but if I do, just forgive me. Sometimes it's almost impossible not to misspeak, but anyway. You see, the sermon title that we have for today is Peace with the People, and when we read the text, I'm going to point something out that I want you to notice, but there's a verse that I want to read to you, and I want you to keep this verse in mind as we study this passage this afternoon, okay? I want you to hear this verse. I want you to try to bear it in mind as we make our way through the passage. And the text that I'm going to read to you comes from the prophet Ezekiel, and it's Ezekiel 33:11. Where God's Word says, say unto them, this is God speaking to His people through the mouth of Ezekiel, say unto them, listen to these words, as I live, saith the Lord, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn ye from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel? So as we talk about this afternoon, peace with the people, I want you to understand that we have a God that seeks peace. And in fact, in the words of Ezekiel, has no delight. God takes no delight in the death of the wicked, but rather encourages all to turn from their ways and to put their faith in His Son. So this afternoon, I'm going to read to you from 2 Samuel, chapter number 3, verse 27. Now, we closed last time we were together, and that's been a few weeks ago. We closed with verse 27, but I want to pick that up so you can get that fresh in your mind. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate. Now, remember, Abner was the guy that was working with Ish-bosheth to rival David's kingdom. Abner had killed Joab's brother, a man by the name of Asahel. Verse 27, and when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly and smote him there under the fifth rib that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. And afterward, when David heard it, he said, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, or that is a leper, or that leaneth on a staff, or that falleth on the sword, or that lacketh bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner because he had slain their brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. And David said to Joab and to all the people, and I want you to notice this, as if you're somebody that writes in your Bible, underlines things, you will notice a repetition of this phrase, all the people. In fact, you may, and this is some of where we pull our sermon title from, you're going to notice this mentioned 7 times over the next few verses. And David said to Joab and to all the people that were with him, rend your clothes and gird you with sackcloth and mourn before Abner And King David himself followed the bier or the grave or the casket, not the grave, but followed the casket. And they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented over Abner and said, "Died Abner as a fool dieth? Thy hands were not bound, nor thy feet put into fetters. As a man falleth before wicked men, so fellest thou." And all the people wept again over him. And when all the people came to cause David to eat meat while it was yet day, David sware, saying, "So do God to me, and more also, if I taste bread or aught else till the sun be down." And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them. And whatsoever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day it was not of the king to slay Abner the son of Ner. And the king said unto his servants, "Know ye not that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel? And I am this day weak, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zariah, be too hard for me. The Lord shall reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness." This afternoon, for a little while, the thought of peace with the people, or the king seeks or brings peace with the people. I know that not all of you are as cultured as I am. And by that I mean not all of you have a true appreciation for Star Trek. You're not as cultured as I am, because you don't have a true appreciation for Star Trek. But I can never resist the opportunity to use a good Star Trek illustration. And one of the movies that was released, in fact, it was entitled The Undiscovered Country, the Klingons, who were the arch enemy of the Federation, the good guys, the Klingons were in desperate straits. Their home planet was nearing destruction. And so they were seeking peace with the Federation of Planets, with Starfleet, if you will. And yet this was the arch enemy of the good guys. Klingons, bad guys. Starfleet, good guys, in other words. Yet they were trying to sue for peace. They were trying to establish peace because they needed it. Okay. Yet there were some who refused to allow there to be peace between these two warring factions. And in fact, in the movie, to prevent peace, a leader, one of the Klingon leaders, is assassinated. And throughout the movie, Captain Kirk and Spock and these guys, they seek to find out who's behind it, what caused it. And at the end of the movie, Captain Kirk, who never has liked the Klingons, in fact, if you're a fan, you know they were responsible for the death of his son. But at the end, he ends up risking his own life in order to help bring peace. There are always people like Joab who will not be satisfied with peace. And in that movie, there were many Joabs who were manipulating things behind the scenes in order to prevent peace from prevailing. And in our world today, all you got to do is turn on the nightly news and you can see there are a lot of Joabs in the world. People who are preventing peace from prevailing. Yet the king, in our story, in our narrative, the king refuses to allow Joab's selfish efforts to destroy the peace process. The king desires peace for the people, and the king will establish peace with the people. And while that was true to a degree for King David in this narrative, it is true to a much greater degree for the Son of David, King Jesus, who seeks to bring peace with His people and for His people. And even though there are Joabs out there who seek to disturb the peace process, King Jesus will bring peace. He will make peace with His people. That's my thought for this afternoon. Because, again, Ezekiel 33, God doesn't delight in the death of the wicked. He sees a peaceful God who sent His Son to make peace with men. And so God does not delight in the death of the wicked. He brings peace. And rather than reveling in Abner's death, David mourns. Now I want you to just look back real quick at the close of verse 21. David sent Abner away and he went in peace. Close of verse 22, that is, David had sent him away and he was gone in peace. The close of verse 23, he was gone in peace. And if you'll remember the last time we studied this, we talked about a kingly pardon. That David had issued a pardon to Abner. Abner was his enemy. Abner was working to establish the throne of Ishbosheth, who was the son of Saul. Yet David was willing to forgive his enemy and made a covenant of peace with Abner. But Joab wasn't going to have it. And Joab took matters into his own hands, and he mercilessly kills. He murders Abner. And that's where we begin there in verse number 27 at the gate of Hebron. He, and I think we find out later in the text, his brother is also there. Abishai, his brother, kill Joab, and Abishai kill Abner. David, in this passage, seems to genuinely mourn Joab's actions. Now, if you're in this at all, you got to get the context. Israel is at war. The Philistines have invaded. They have control of a large chunk of Israeli land, and there is real. I mean, the nation is fledgling and is struggling. They're under a siege, and David is trying to establish peace. And in order to bring peace, he even makes a deal with Abner. Joab won't have that, so Joab kills Abner. But it seems as though David genuinely mourns Abner's death. But now get this, it would have been politically wise for David to publicly mourn Abner's death. Again, if you go back, Abner had a lot of clout. He had a lot of position, a lot of power, a lot of authority. The house of Saul or the tribe of Benjamin would have fallen in step behind Abner. And so it was smart politically for David to call Joab's actions out and condemn them. But I think it was more than that. I don't think it was just a politically smart move. I think David, seeking peace for the people, genuinely mourned and grieved over Joab's undermining of his peace efforts. Generally grieve that. And what we learn is that David was going to be a different kind of king. Step back into this ancient culture. If your enemy was killed and that established you as king, you didn't mourn that. In this ancient culture, if your arch enemy, the Klingons, if you will, they're going to be annihilated, they're going to be wiped out. You don't mourn that process, you relish in it. But David is going to be a different kind of king. A king who pursues peace. And a king who relishes life. And this passage reveals just exactly what kind of king David will become. But more than that, it portrays for us the kind of king King Jesus is, the Son of David will become. Our King does not delight in the death of His enemies, but He too seeks peace. I have got a number of divisions within this passage, but we're going to move through them very quickly. Now get it, Joab has mercilessly killed Abner, after David had gone to great lengths to make peace with him. Verse 28, there's a proclamation of innocence. Verse 28, David says, I and my kingdom are guiltless. This was not my plan. Do you get that? David wants it to be known. He's making a public proclamation. I had established peace with Abner. I was moving forward with the peace process. David's desire is to unite the kingdom under his kingship as one in order that they may become the nation they're supposed to become. Drive out the enemies, get rid of the Philistines, and establish dominance. That is David's desire, that the people would flourish, right? And so he makes a proclamation of his innocence by saying, this was not my plan. David is saying, me and Joab didn't have some closed-door meeting in which we conspired to have Abner killed. Instead, he makes a very public proclamation declaring his innocence in this. This was not on me. I didn't do this. And he wants all Israel to know that. Again, he wants all the people that were Abner supporters, those who supported Ishbosheth, he wanted all of them to know, this was not my doing. I had established a covenant of peace with Abner, but it was Joab who did this. And let the blood in verse 28, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner. This was not us. So there's a proclamation of innocence. But then in verse 29, there's a condemnation of Joab. And this is not soft, gentle words from David. He pulls out no stops. I mean, he lets it roll. Let it rest. Let the blood of Abner rest on the head of Joab and on all of his father's house. And let there not fail of the house of Joab, listen to this, one that hath an issue. Now, you can get in that and study it. And this condemnation of Joab and his family is David saying before God, I want the house of Joab to be weak, frail, sickly, and even suicidal. But this is strong language because he has completely undermined the king's authority. You understand, Joab had no right to take matters into his own hands. The king had established a covenant of peace with Abner. Joab had no right to do this. So when he says, let there not fail, he is saying, let there be one after the other, one right after the other. One that is a leper, one that leans on a staff who can't even stand upright, one that falls on a sword. That is the underlying inclination of that. Is like what happened to Saul when Saul committed suicide and fell on his sword. Or one that goes hungry, that lacks bread. Again, this is public. In front of all Israel, in an effort to bring peace to the people, David not only proclaims his innocence, but he condemns Joab's actions. So much so that he says, I'm essentially casting a curse, if you will, just for lack of a better term, bringing down judgment, asking God to bring down judgment on Joab's entire family line because of this. And then in verses 31-34, there's a lamentation. There's a proclamation, a condemnation, but now there's a lamentation in verses 31-34. And this is really interesting. David said, verse 31, to Joab and all the people, but the author wants us to know, David makes Joab rend your clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourn before Abner. So here's this funeral procession. Unfortunately, we've seen too much and too many of them recently, right? There's this funeral procession. And in that Old Testament economy, a way of showing brokenness was putting on sackcloth, putting on old rags, and just a public display of mourning. And the king says, Joab, you may have murdered the man, but you're going to mourn right along with us. And in fact, in today's vernacular, when the pallbearers are carrying away Abner's body, Joab, you're going to be standing right in front of them, covered in sackcloth, and you better be mourning the whole time. Now, as I have thought on this and read, I've tried to be fair and judicious. David, in my estimation, this is just my opinion, and when I get to glory, he may straighten me out about it, but I think David lets Joab off way too easy. He directly defied the king's order by going and killing Abner, whom he had made peace with. And really the only thing that he does is call down this curse from heaven on him and makes him walk before the casket in a display of public mourning. But he, you know, really, I think David would have probably been better served if he'd have just removed Joab from his position of authority. But I think David was a little afraid to try that, to be honest with you. Again, in his desire for peace, he didn't want to remove someone who with great power from his council, if you will. But David follows even behind the casket. You see that close of verse 31. And to honor Abner. I think this is David going to great lengths. It would be up to you to determine how genuine this is. You know, in your own mind, what do you think? But burying Abner in Hebron, as you see in verse 32, is a very intentional act, because this is where the great patriarchs and matriarchs of the faith are buried. This is where Abraham's buried, in Hebron. So, like in England, only the most privileged are buried in Westminster Abbey. In America, you have to be honored in order to be buried in Arlington. And in Israel, you had to be somebody of some significance to be buried in Hebron. And so think about this. This is David again. I think it's a wise political move, but I think he's also honoring the peace treaty that he had made in this effort to unify Israel. He buries him at Hebron. The king lifts up his voice. He weeps at the grave. All the people weep with him. Verse 33, the king laments over Abner. And then he says these words. And the best thing I think maybe I can do is help you with it is to say it like this. Even Abner didn't deserve to die like this. Even Abner didn't deserve to be brutally murdered under the guise of friendship. When Joab and Abishai say, come on over here, guy, we want to talk to you. And then they stick a knife up under his ribs when he's not expecting it. David says there was no reason for Abner to die as a fool dies. His hands weren't bound, his feet were not put in fetters, yet he fell like wicked men do, and even Abner didn't deserve that. And the people mourn again. And then after the lamentation, there's a deprivation or self-deprivation in verse 35. David refuses to eat. He fasts, if you will. He is mourning and fasting the death of Abner. Mourning and fasting the death of Abner. He refuses to eat. The people say, man, you need to eat. You've mourned. You're emotionally spent. You're wiped out. You need to eat. David says, no, I won't do it. In fact, God do to me what happened to Abner if I eat anything till the sun goes down. And then we see a shift. And this is not unimportant. This is important. There begins to be this major shift. You might remember initially, Israel, and I speak in general terms, had rejected David as king. But now, I think they see his wisdom, his gentleness, his desire for the good of the nation. And so they now get behind him and support him. So following the lamentation and the deprivation, I want you to see the adoration of the people in verses 36 and 37. All the people took notice of it. and it pleased them. And really, whatever the king did pleased all the people, for they understood that it was not in the king's purposes. This was not David's plan to kill Abner, the son of Ner. And so here is a major shift, and this is what is going to lead towards all of Israel supporting David as king. Again, God had said, this is going to be my king. This is my choice. Ish-bosheth opposed it. Abner had opposed it. But God is going to bring it about. And so I think David's wisdom, again, I don't think David was ever really fooled by Abner. I think David was probably smart enough to realize Abner was looking after Abner. Still, he didn't deserve to die that way. But I think it was a gentleness about David that he genuinely mourned the death of Abner, someone he had sought to make peace with. And so much so that there's a commendation. This is so hard as we read this. In verse 38, the king said unto his servants, "Know ye not that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel?" It's hard to find good things to say about your enemies. But let that be a lesson. David doesn't revel in Abner's death. He doesn't say what a dirty, rotten scoundrel he was. He deserved that. He should have never supported Ish-bosheth in the first place. He got what was coming to him. You know, like we like, he made his bed, let him lie in it. And how we think? Maybe the wise, gentle shepherd understood what the wise, gentle shepherd Jesus would say many years later, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Blessed are the peacemakers. David, rather than just coming down on Abner for his behavior, he actually commends him and says, you know, he's a good man. But I'm asking you to think. Was that just a political move? Or was it also the sincerity of David that a, not necessarily a God-fearing man, but a man who was willing to help establish peace within the empire had been brutally murdered and killed? And so even David can find something good to say about his enemies. And I guess we could make a lot of application there, but maybe we just do a little better sometimes. As my mama used to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And then finally, I want you to notice the limitation of the king. And this is something I referenced a minute ago in verse 39. "And I am this day weak, though anointed king." Now, he's not king over all Israel. That's not going to happen until chapter 5. But though I'm anointed king, I'm still weak. I have limitations. And I think that's one of the reasons why he didn't respond more strongly to Joab's behavior. "And these men, the son of Zeruiah, be too hard for me." So these are some ruthless scoundrels, rough fellas. And those are those David's mighty men who he's talking about. And David, perhaps David is saying, if I try and expel Joab, then he may take a whole group of those mighty men with him. But nonetheless, David turns it over and says in the close of verse 39, "The Lord will reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness." I want to close with this thought. Like David, our king pursues peace. Isaiah entitles Jesus the Prince of Peace. The Prince of Peace. And he seeks to bring peace, and yet there are Joabs out there who seek to destroy it. Don't be a Joab. Don't be someone who is trying to undermine the peaceful kingdom of Jesus Christ. Don't be one that sows strife, sows discord, but be a peacemaker. those who act like Joab and ignore the king's commands are not acting in accordance to Scripture. I'm going to read just a couple of things to you. Book of Romans in chapter 14, I'm just going to read a couple of verses. Usually I cheat and mark my place, but I didn't this afternoon. Romans 14, verse 19 says, "Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace. Our king is the Prince of Peace, and we as kingdom citizens should follow his example and be men and women who seek for peace within the kingdom. Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace and things wherewith one may edify another." We ought to be in the business of building, not destroying. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. I want to read that. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect, be of good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you." In Colossians 1 verse 20 says that Jesus, through the blood of His cross, has brought us peace. Our king sought to be a peacemaker. He delights in peace even more than David. David made peace with his enemies. King Jesus has made peace with his enemies. There are those who try to usurp or undermine that peace, but the king will ultimately bring peace. But don't be one that sows discord in the process. And if I haven't worn you out, let me just close by saying, far, far more real than Captain Kirk making peace with the Klingons is King Jesus making peace with the people. I told you in that movie, Captain Kirk risked his life to bring peace. That's just make-believe. But in real life, Jesus gave His life to make peace. And my dear friends, if we're going to enjoy peace with God and the peace of God, you're going to have to know the Son of God. You're going to have to be born again. Our King delights in peace. He is a peacemaker who brings peace to the people. And as we study this Old Testament stuff, I just want you to see it's just a portrait, painting a portrait of who Jesus Christ is and what He would do for us. God bless.